With our special guest tonight, Massimo Mazzucco, we're going to talk about his latest documentary, Cancer, The Forbidden Cures, in just a moment. I want to finish up with some more 9/11 stuff when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Massimo, a few more 9/11 questions for you, then we'll move on to Cancer, The Forbidden Cures. So you're talking about these. So the picture we saw of what we thought was them going through airport security, that was not that's not the picture?
No, that's not the hijacked plane. This is a funny story. I mean, think of these four guys, Mohammed Atta, Alomari, and the other two, who are in Boston already on the evening of the 9th.
Okay.
On the 10th in the morning, Atta and the other guy rent a car and go to Portland, Maine, where they are photographed in a pizza place, in a Calmart, I don't know where. At 4 in the morning, they get on a commuter plane from Portland, Maine, back to Boston in order to get the connecting flight, which is the one to Los Angeles that they're going to hijack. And this is the official version. Why would ever anybody who needs to, you know, this plan has been in the works for 5 years, and you're risking missing your airplane, missing your connection, just because you need to go to Portland. The real reason is that, guess what? By going to Portland and then having to board this connecting flight from Boston to Los Angeles, Mohammed Atta's luggage, this way it can get lost and it remains grounded. It doesn't make it on time to the plane. Therefore, FBI finds it, and lo and behold, it's filled with Quran, with the Testament, with the will of the suicide bombers, with airplane manuals. I mean, just think of this guy.
And let me ask you this. Why would he even have luggage if he's on a suicide mission?
And why would he put his will in the luggage, which is going to be in a plane that he's going to drive into the Twin Towers?
Well, that doesn't. And let me ask you this, too.
Talk about planted evidence.
Is it true they found his passport intact outside the World Trade Center buildings?
It was not his. It was the other guy's, Alomari. And they found only the page, but we were lucky enough that the page had the picture very visible and the name was very visible.
In all that rubble. They find this passport.
The plane enters the Twin Towers. The explosion is about 2,000 degrees centigrade. I don't know in Fahrenheit, but it's probably 3,000 plus. So it basically melts and destroys the entire plane. But a piece of a passport survives and flies four blocks away and is found, I think, the day after by no less than an agent, an FBI agent, who says, oh, look at this. There's a picture here and a name on it. And the name is of one of the, I think it's Al-Sukami is the name of the guy. But this is nothing. If you look at the Massawi trial, and you look at what was found, allegedly, in the hole of Shanksville, where no plane is seen, you have four identity documents of four different hijackers, all with picture and the name readable and visible.
Now, did they have identities of all the other passengers?
No,
intact?
Not that we were shown, of course. But these four, I mean, you get a bandana belonging to a terrorist, which is unburnt. A will from one of the hijackers was found intact and unburned. This is the official version, okay? I'm not making this up. In the hall of Shanksville, where no plane is to be seen anywhere. I mean, it's offensive to, and I think that for a journalist, to have to swallow this and not to say anything, I don't know what, you know, I would not want to be a journalist in this country.
Okay, what's the picture? What are they painting here? What do they want? What's the end game?
Well, the end game is that somebody wants us to feel that we have been attacked in the worst attack America has ever suffered so that we can go and do justice all across the world.
And never stop.
And it never stops, of course. And it's already, you know, they gave it away.
And also whittle away at rights at the same time.
Well, you know, that never hurts. While you're at it, might as well add
a little. And then in the puzzle, is there this world economic collapse, specifically us, to also use that as part of the plan?
I don't know that part. I have not studied this enough to have a strong opinion on this, so I would refrain from stating what I think. I think that the 9/11 was originated by the neocon think tank, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Wolfowitz mostly. Bush did not have anything to do with it. It was, I would, my opinion, personal opinion, is that he was not intelligent enough to be part of this. And in fact, he even gave away a few things of the plan without willing. What the neocons wanted to do, very clearly, and they stated it in a document called The Project for the New American Century, which is also the title I gave to my documentary, is that they needed, we needed, they said, to go and basically get control of the world while Russia is still down on their knees, which was at the end of the 90s. The years kept going by, and that's why they were trying to get rid of Clinton so badly, and they couldn't. And they couldn't do anything. So finally, when the occasion came, they rushed to it, and they did it as soon as possible, which was a few months after Bush was installed in the White House.
And they haven't stopped.
Well, you know, we'll have to stop at some point.
But even this administration's running with it.
Well, one lesson that we learned from Kennedy, I think, is that unless you're willing to risk your life, the president cannot really change foreign policy. You become a prisoner. The moment you walk to the White House, this is my opinion, you become a prisoner.
Well, you may be right there.
And of what has been done before. So either you're willing to stand against this whole thing, which Kennedy wanted
or
to.
Or you just let it happen.
Or you just, you know, become a part of the mechanism.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Let's talk about cancer, the forbidden cure. That we do a lot of alternative medicine, alternative health programs here. This, obviously, has gotten your eye. How come? What happened?
I'm sorry, repeat the question, please.
The issue of cancer is something that caught your eye.
Well, let me put it this way. My father died of cancer some 25 years ago.
Okay.
At the time, I had no idea, of course, that alternative therapies even existed. But I do remember this feeling of the man being caught into a kind of a machinery where there was no hope from the beginning. And that kind of stayed with me for the rest of my life. Of course, he passed away after a few months. When I started learning about alternative therapies, and when I started learning about the suppression of all these therapies that has been happening in the course of the last 100 years, then a larger picture started to form. And I started to understand why he had to go through that and why everybody even today has to go through that kind of machinery. It's a very complex problem. I would say really no one's fault. You can't point a finger in one direction or another. Let's just say that modern medicine, modern oncology has developed in this direction in the last 100 years. And basically we are in a situation today where the system, the medical system, the oncological system is so large and so expensive that it needs its patients at least as much as the patients needs the apparatus.
Well, that's right.
And they're not willing to find a cure. They don't want, especially if the cure is natural and therefore cannot be patented. The crux of the whole problem lays in the fact that there are many natural cures for cancer.
It's like a repair shop at a car dealership. They want your car to break down so you can bring it in to get repaired.
Yes, and in fact, well, there's a difference, though, that in the car you get it repaired. Here, they simply milk the cow, so to speak, is a very bad, ugly expression, but it is the truth, in my opinion, the cow being the patient. Once they decide that you're terminal and they're going to let you die, they try to get every possible penny out of your pockets before you die, and that is done through very expensive processes such as radiology, radiotherapy and chemotherapy. And chemotherapy can cost you up to $7,000 per month. Are you not willing to, are you not going to prescribe that and prescribe instead a little herb that might even cure you? Of course not. So the problem is very large. And I started finding one cure that was suppressed, two cures that were suppressed, three that were suppressed, four, five, and then I saw a pattern. And when I saw a pattern is when I decided I should try to put them all together, at least the most important, the most well-known, to try to give the larger picture.
Tell me a little bit about the Italian doctor who's using soda bicarbonate. Yeah.
Giulio Mancini. This is a very unique story. One day, somebody on my website comes to me and says, you know, there's this Italian doctor who cures cancer with baking soda. And I reacted by saying, you know, leave me alone. I got more important things to do.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those. What?
Exactly. And I didn't want to hear it, but he kept insisting. He says, no, 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 you got to talk to him. You got to talk to him. He's legitimate. He's got a point. So finally, I talked to him. I even got to meet him in person at some point. And when he explained his theory to me, it all not only was it very clear and very convincing, but it all became so simple. And I was really convinced. And then I said, you know, I want to interview people whom you have healed from cancer. Because he had all these written declarations, which to me meant really nothing.
You want him on film.
I want to interview the people myself.
Right.
In this case, especially with cancer. Before I put out any information, you're dealing with life and death. You're dealing with extreme suffering. I mean, George, do you know that 20,000 people every day die of cancer in the world? That's three Japanese tsunamis every day.
That's huge. Yeah.
That's 9 million people a year die of cancer. I mean, we are shocked by the tsunami. Tsunami is nothing. We got three tsunamis every day in cancer.
And those who just die.
Those, exactly. Yeah. Those who just die. And the others who suffer.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
it's a very, 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 it's a plague. Anyway, so before I wanted to do anything, because my website is pretty popular, and before I put anything out, I wanted to check. So I started interviewing people, and they told me the story, and I have them all on video, and I put them out on the internet. And I've talked to people, all terminal patients, meaning sent home to die, who have been completely cured. I'm talking glioblastoma, for example.
By him.
Or astrocytoma, which are incurable brain cancers, liver cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer. Dr. Simoncini cures breast cancer with injections of baking soda without having to remove the breast. Bladder cancer, prostate cancer. I've talked to so many people that at some point I was shocked.
I was going to say, in the beginning, did you think, no, this is just not real?
In the beginning, no. But when he explained the theory to me, it made sense. And maybe, let me try. I'm not a doctor, of course.
It has to do with the acidic body, doesn't it?
Well, in a way, yes. It's very near the Gerson philosophy, but there's a difference in it.
All right, explain.
What Dr. Simoncini says, quite simply, and again, I'm not a doctor, so please take my words for what they are. He says, we all inhabited by fungi. His theory is that cancer is a fungus. It's caused by a fungus called Candida. This fungus, we all have at any given time in our body, especially women are very familiar with it. Sometimes they get vaginal infections from this Candida, okay? But usually, normally, our immune system keeps this fungi under control so that there's a balance in our body and they don't take over. If, this is Simoncini's theory, if in any given situation your immune system or your psychological situation or both or any other are lower than usual, then the fungi can manage to form a small colony somewhere in your body, and it usually starts in the intestine, but not necessarily there. And if they manage to penetrate the tissue, then the immune system is no longer capable of removing them. They start forming a mass, which attacks the organ.
Which is a tumor.
The organ reacts by pushing back. And what you see as what is called a so-called uncontrolled growth is, in fact, according to Simoncini, a desperate reaction from the cell, from the organ, which is trying to push back the intruder.
Yeah.
It's not like when you go to the beach and you puncture your finger with your toe with those, I don't know what you call them, they have little spines, black spines.
Those little jellyfish or whatever.
Oh, and your thumb becomes very, very swollen immediately.
Sure.
That swelling is your body trying
coral
to
reef,
reject.
The coral reef.
The same exact thing. Yeah. So his reasoning was, if it is the fungus that causes this, which is the worst enemy of fungi in nature? Sodium bicarbonate. If anybody has a garden or a lawn and has seen the gardeners, they use baking soda against fungi.
Just sprinkle it on there.
Absolutely. The reason is I'm not going to get into the biological and chemical reason, but sodium bicarbonate happens to be the worst enemy of fungi. Well, lo and behold, he started 30 years ago with the first patient. He tried sodium bicarbonate on the tumor. The tumor went away. I've interviewed a person, the first person he ever cured is an Italian man who in 1986 was given 6 months of life. He had a lung tumor, and he was considered terminal. He was sent home to die. He tried the Simoncini therapy, and I interviewed him 2 years ago. That is 25 years after, more or less, and he's still alive, and he's never had a cancer again. See, this was the first one. After that, I started interviewing more and more people, and the stories that I hear are simply incredible, and they all have one thing in common. They instinctively rejected chemotherapy and radiotherapy, and they went straight for a natural solution like this.
Which is dramatic.
Well, it's also a problem with, it becomes a problem with your oncologist, and I cannot say, I want to be clear on this, I'm not anybody listening who is doing chemotherapy or radiotherapy, I'm not encouraging them to stop this. All I'm saying is that Dr. Simoncini's theory is that chemotherapy, because it kills both healthy cells and cancer cells, it ultimately weakens your immune system, so it takes away the possibilities that you have left to come back and restore your health.
You want fresh new cells to replace the cancer cells, right?
Well, you want to be able to fight them, and the only ones that can really fight your cancer is your own immune system. But if the immune system is debilitated by the chemotherapy, which it is, ultimately, you don't have any more defenses. So, yes, it's true. Chemotherapy gives you a few more months or a year or whatever you want to calculate of extra life, because by killing both good cells and bad cells, it also kills the cancer. But then ultimately, you are left without defenses.
That's right.
Yep. And the cancer takes over and prevails.
Does he make people drink?
No, absolutely not. It's not like you just drink bicarbonate and you get rid of cancer.
Okay.
He has developed very, very specific techniques, and he cannot cure all cancers, by the way.
Why not?
Because he needs to reach the organ. In order to hit the cancer with the correct amount and the sufficient amount of sodium bicarbonate, he has to reach the organ nearby. He has to hit it like a target. For example, in the lungs, he goes into the lungs with catheters and places the lungs so that they actually spread the sodium bicarbonate on the tumor. The same thing he does with the liver.
I see. He's physically got a hit.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I know one person. I talked to her and interviewed her. One lady. She lives in the desert of Australia, in the middle of nowhere. And she found she had bladder cancer. She wrote to Simoncini. Simoncini wrote back, gave her the instructions how to do it. She went to her doctor, who taught her how to use a catheter to insert the catheter.
On her own?
On her own. She bought the sodium bicarbonate, the kind that Simoncini told her, used the dosage that he told her. In 1 month, she completely cleared her bladder cancer.
Amazing.
I mean, she was completely cured. Her own oncologist could not believe it.
And, well, why is this so suppressed? I mean, why this is on your documentary, of course, but why isn't this a major story
in fact,
every major newspaper?
In fact, it is the opposite. Simoncini has been disbarred from the Italian Order of Medical Orders, has been taken to trial for wrongful death at least 3 or 4 times. I mean, they have done to him the most incredible, awful things they could do. And actually, this is what turned me on to him.
Do they think he's a quack, Massimo?
Well, no, they say he's a quack because, you know, the media turned against him. Oh, ho, ho, the doctor cures cancer with sodium bicarbonate. I mean, it's very easy to make fun of that, okay? It's a sure target. I mean, you can't miss if you want to make fun of somebody like that. The problem is that it really cures people. I've talked to these people. I have the interviews.
You've seen them. You've looked in their eyes, haven't you?
I would not, believe me, I would not put out this kind of information if I were not 101% sure of what I'm saying.
Did anybody cry in front of you?
During the interviews?
Yeah.
One person did because she was not healed completely and she was fighting hard. She had a tumor all the way in the throat and up and into the eye and all that. I mean, just by describing the situation, the struggle that she had to go through. But what made her cry, and it's really interesting, is not the fight. It was the fight that she had to withstand against her own oncologist, who would not let her do this kind of cure, who would not help her, who would not find, for example, a nurse who would do the injections of sodium bicarbonate for her, because nobody would do that to you here in America.
If you were to have cancer cells in a Petri dish and you squirted the sodium bicarbonate all over it, would it kill it that way?
Yes. I mean, I cannot say this for sure. I never tried. But according to what I know, yes. Absolutely. The problem is this. It's very simple.
You think a laboratory would do
well,
this?
Well, yeah, I know. This issue has been raised a lot. The problem is this. Every oncologist and every doctor in the world will tell you that whenever a patient dies of cancer, he'll find his body completely invaded by fungi. So, actually, the proof would be right there. But what the oncologist will tell you is that the fungi, being an opportunistic form of life, comes in after the tumor has started. In other words, they consider the tumor, the fungi, a consequence.
A byproduct. We'll be back. More to go on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, filmmaker, documentary producer, Massimo Mazzucco. We're going to take phone calls with him next hour. I'll be back with more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Massimo, tell us about the story of the Canadian nurse. It's a good story.
Oh, Renee Cais.
Yeah.
Renee Cais is an incredible story. She lived in the first part of the last century, actually, in the entire last century, because she died at 91 or 92, I think. When in the 1930s, her mother was diagnosed with cancer, and she received this formula from the local medicine man in this country, in Canada. And she tried the herbal formula on her mother, and she was healed from cancer. So she decided she wanted to cure people with that herbal formula. She went through her entire life. She never became a doctor. She was a nurse. She went through her entire life, and she has collected more than 50,000 signatures of supporters and people that she has cured with cancer, from cancer. And even though she collected all this material, her cure was never approved. The cure can be found today. It's called Essiac-T, which is her name reversed. Her name is Cais, the last name, and if you reverse it, you get Essiac-T, E-S-S-I-E-C. And it can be bought, but it cannot be stated on the label that it cures cancer.
No.
Well, they cannot say it. I can. It does. I know for a fact I've cured a friend of mine who used that, who was terminal cancer in the liver, and he used SCFT, and he has healed completely since then.
What is it?
It's a mix of herbs. Now, the problem, you see, with all these alternative cures, there's a very interesting fact. You're faced with so many valid cures against cancer, that you start asking yourself, wait a minute now, how can one disease be cured by so many different ways? What really the fact is that each of these remedies cures cancer, in my opinion, at a different stage. For example, herbal remedies like the Cais tea or the Hoxie treatment don't actually cure the cancer. What they do is they help restore your immune system so that the immune system will cure the cancer. People like Simoncini, for example, instead, which is actually strictly allopathic, it will attack the cancer directly. It does not go to the immune system anymore. It goes directly against the cancer. The Gerson therapy, for example, which is probably the most widely known, I would presume, in your program, which is based on diet, also helps get rid of the acidity, which you were mentioning before, and to restore a great balance in your body and a perfect immune system, which will then get rid of cancer. So they all act at different stages, really. And they all can coexist, because I find myself with this problem. How can I put together in a film 10 or 12 different remedies for cancer, which are so different from one another? You know, I mean, I ask myself the question. And in fact, I realized that each of them acts at a different stage of the cancer. Of course, the best stage of all is prevention, but it's become very hard for us to prevent cancer now. If you look at the statistics, at the beginning of the last century, the turn of the last century, 1900, 20 people, one person out of 20 would end up with cancer statistically. In the 1940s, it was one person out of 16. In the 1970s, one person out of 10 would end up with cancer in their life. At the turn of this century, in 2000, one person out of 3 gets cancer in the course of their life. And we are approaching the 1-to-2 ratio.
Why does government crack down on all these alternative medicine practitioners? All of them. They all have been chased.
Because the oncology system, the modern oncology system, in my opinion, is the biggest money-making machine in the world. And they need the people, the sick people, to make money. It's as simple as that. You don't want the cure for cancer, because then they don't sell you their medicines anymore. It's as simple as that.
It's big business now, isn't it?
It's huge business. I mean, you know, we don't have to. We're not discovering anything by standing in big pharma. It's probably the biggest single operation in the world making money. I think their income last year was $550 billion worldwide. I mean, this industry is the most powerful in the world, period. I mean, I think it's bigger than oil and tobacco together. And they really control the media and the government, of course, which are all puppets. And they, you know, everybody has to do what they want.
Why doesn't, like, 60 Minutes do a documentary on
Simoncini? Because it's controversial. Because his enemies have already provided enough bad information or misinformation in the internet, which can get you confused, honestly. And if you go look up Simoncini, you'll find 50% of great testimonies about it and 50% of hell about it.
Does he look like a monster on the internet?
They make him look like a monster. I mean, whoever does not want his cure to be recognized as such, whoever defends the current system, they have gone to extreme length to do. I mean, the things that they've done to him, they're only the things that have been done to all the others that you see in the film. This is actually the common thread which I found in all the stories that I told. Each of these people who found a cure has either been boycotted, ignored, kicked out of the system, rejected, treated as a charlatan. And there's a great sentence in the film said by one Christian preacher in the 1940s. He said, "God bless these charlatans. They're only charlatans who cure cancer."
How do you weed through, though, Massimo? How do you weed through the people who may be doing the right thing with alternative treatments from those who are obvious hucksters out there who try to take advantage and make money? How do you separate that?
This is the criteria that I followed in picking which stories to tell and which stories not to tell was the amount of available evidence that these treatments actually are useful treatments. When you look into the story of Renee Cais, for example, there's been books written on her, and you know for sure that her treatment worked. So I don't have a moral problem in narrating her story because I know that the evidence is there. So I've only collected the stories of the people, the doctors and non-doctors, where the evidence is so abundant and overwhelming that you know that their cure worked. There are many iffy ones, which I was not sure about, which I left out just to be safe, But there's plenty there for anybody to pick and really decide on your own what to do with your own cancer. I mean, I'm come to the conviction that if a person is able to walk, talk, and eat and feed him or herself normally, he doesn't have to die. This is my conviction at this point. If cancer is caught quickly enough and you don't wait until the very last minute, and especially if you don't destroy your system with chemotherapy. I mean, one thing that really shocked me was to find out that at least 50% of the chemotherapy drugs that give you, they actually are carcinogenic. And I went to the FDA website, and I found a definition on that. It says this, for example, this name of the drug, which I don't remember, is known to be a human carcinogen. And the same is for radiotherapy. Radiotherapy gives you cancer. So the oncological system has three solutions for you, and only three, which are surgery, radiotherapy, and chemotherapy, two of which are actually carcinogenic. It really makes no sense to me. And it should start making no sense to patients, too. I mean, they should start asking themselves, why are they giving me a carcinogenic remedy, which is not a remedy, because eventually everybody who's decided to be terminal, they eventually die.
What happened to Laetril? I remember that. It's a vitamin, B17, if I recall.
Yes.
They got it from apricot extract and things like that. Whatever happened to that?
The story was big in the 1980s. The theory was developed in the 50s by one Dr. Krebs, but it became big in the late 70s when one doctor named Richardson opened up a clinic in San Francisco and started curing people with B17 vitamin, which is found mostly in the seed of the apricot. After he started curing patients, the big brass from the clinic came to him and says, "You can't do this. You can't give this to people." He says, "But it's working." And he said, "We know it's working, but it's not allowed by the FDA. Stop using it." Laetril, or vitamin B17, was actually recognized to be a cure for cancer by the most prominent cancer expert at Sloan Kettering in the 1980s. His name was Segura. It was a Japanese name. I don't remember the last name. Segura something. I'm sorry. I don't remember the last name. He was, in the history of cancer, he's one of the most known cancer researchers altogether in history. He wrote an article in which said, I find that vitamin B17 is the most effective cure against cancer we have ever had here at Sloan Kettering, period. He was asked by Sloan Kettering to recant. He refused to recant, and he was kicked out. And after he was kicked out, Sloan Kettering produced a mock research in which they actually said that they found that vitamin B17 does not work. And the thing was killed right there. But we know by the testimonies of so many people that it did work. Again, this is another case in history in which it has been suppressed because it does not fit the so-called current paradigm.
If you had cancer.
Yes.
Thank God you don't. But if you did.
I don't know. I may. You never know.
Would you do the Hoxie treatment? Would you do the Nurse Renee treatment?
Let me ask you this question more generically. I mean, it would be for me, but this is what I suggest for anybody. It depends at what stage do you discover to have cancer, I think. If I find that I have cancer early in the early stages, when I still don't have metastasis, and according to which organ it is in, I would probably go for either the herbal treatment of René Caisse, the SCACT, or, for example, for the Hoxie treatment or for the Gerson therapy, if I have time enough. If you're more pressured because you already have metastasis, then maybe you don't have enough time to rebuild your immune system completely. Then you have to choose something more aggressive. In this case, I would choose, for example, either the Simoncini treatment or the shark cartilage, which is another well-known natural remedy which attacks cancer. And shark cartilage is known to have this quality which is called anti-angiogenic. It means it blocks the new blood vessels in the tumor to form so that the tumor can actually stops growing. It stops growing. I actually had a dog some 10 years ago. She came from Italy with us, and she was very old. And then she had one day we found out that she had cancer in her liver. I took her to the vet, and the vet says, you know, this dog, I can operate her, but this dog is going to be dead in 2 months anyway. And I said, well, operate her anyway. Then I gave her the shark cartilage. 2 years later, I took the same dog to remove a tooth. We end up with the same veterinary. He doesn't recognize her at first. Then he pulls out the papers and says, wait a minute, this dog must be dead. This is my signature here, carcinoma. I wrote this. I operated her 2 years ago. He wanted to know what I did. And he said, can I take x-rays? We took x-rays, and we saw that where she had this metastasis in the liver, they were all encapsulated by this kind of gel, which basically suffocated the tumor, and it never grew again. My dog eventually died of a heart failure 2 years later. So the tumor was actually killed by the shark cartilage. In this case, it was an allopathic treatment, meaning the shark cartilage attacks directly the tumor, but it depends from case to case. And again, I'm not a doctor, and I don't want to give even generic suggestions to people. All I can say to those who have this kind of problem is to get as much information as they can and then take responsibility and take their own health in their own hands. Because unfortunately, the oncological system today is not ready to cure us. It's not the main purpose of the system is not to cure us, not necessarily. And most doctors, I believe, are in perfect good faith. I mean, for somebody to become a doctor by itself, it means he wants to care. He cares about other people. And he wants to help other people. So I'm not saying that they're, you know, bastards or anything like that. It's just that they're taught in a certain way, and that certain way prohibits them from understanding and seeing different solutions. So it's a safety valve that the system itself has installed, so that doctors, oncologists themselves will never even look at a natural cure, because they have been taught from the beginning that the cause of cancer is genetic, it is within the cell. They call it I don't remember the name of the theory right now. But anyway, they believe that the cause of the cancer is within the cell. So when you come up with a natural treatment, of course they would say it doesn't work. Because no natural treatment is actually able to affect the inner workings of the cell. The problem is maybe that the cause is not within the cell. This is what Simoncini maintains. And so far, empirical evidence shows me that he's right. He's onto something really important, I believe.
If somebody opened up a clinic, non-doctor, and you know started working on the sodium bicarbonate, was working on the Nurse Renee's program and doing things like that, would they get shut down, or could they stay open as a natural alternative place?
They would get shut down, I believe, immediately. This is the story of Harry Oxie. Harry Oxie, which is one of the chapters in my film, fought all his life to have clinics in which to give his treatment to people. And he got to a point where he had, I think, 17 clinics in 17 different states. But this was back in the 50s. When,
right.
You know,
and they got them all.
And slowly they got them all. One by one they closed them down. And finally, before he died, he sent his head nurse to open a clinic in Mexico, which is still active now. And you can go to Mexico to get the treatment, but you cannot bring it into the States. You can only bring in enough that you need for your own personal use. You can't even buy it or sell it or ship it. I mean, think, this thing is such a snake's oil, meaning it doesn't, it's so much not a therapy for cancer that you cannot even sell it or ship it to the States. It's forbidden. You cannot. You can only bring in enough needed for your own personal use. Then you have to go back to Mexico and buy more if you want. The story of Harry Hoxie, who was actually a non-doctor, he was not a doctor, he was an oil man, struck oil in Texas, and with his money, he put up his clinics, and he started curing people, and he has got so much documentation, and the AMA never wanted to check it out. He challenged, he even offered to pay for the research to be paid so that they could check out his own research, documentation, but they never went, they didn't want to hear it. They just said, no, he's a charlatan, and they never went to see him. That but people were getting healed. I mean, you don't get to have 17 clinics, working clinics, thriving with the patients unless your therapy works, you know? It's as simple as that.
It's a big battle between mainstream medicine that probably doesn't want you to exist and then the fine line of making sure the person is not a charlatan. It's a tough call, isn't it?
It is difficult. It is difficult. But as we go back to the initial point of our conversation, with internet now and with enough patients, you can certainly isolate the necessary information to make your informed decisions at this point. I believe now we can do that. Before, no, it was really a shot in the dark. You know, but now you have the possibility to check and counter-check and evaluate and read and talk to people and write to people and get their feedback and finally make an informed decision on your health. And this is, I think, is what is the great revolution of internet.
I think so, too. What's next on you? What are you working on?
Well, right now I'm actually trying to do another. I am working on a new documentary, 9/11, which I intend to present before the 10th anniversary. It's going to be called Best Evidence. 10 years of public investigation on 9/11, and it basically aims at collecting all the best pieces of evidence that we have unearthed in this last 10 years. We being the 9/11 truth movement at large in the world, because there's been one problem. At first, we came up with a lot of evidence. Then there was a reaction from the so-called debunkers or the official media, which basically said, oh, we look at the evidence, but it's all bull, you know, it doesn't really have a leg to stand on, and it doesn't hold water, and all these theories are just full of hot air. Well, they're not. They have not debunked the most important questions, and so I intend to put them all together in one document, so that at least if somebody wants to know what are our points, really, and have they really been debunked or not, they have somewhere to go to. Because the discussion on 9/11 now is so vast and so multifaceted that, you know, if somebody wants to look into it for the first time, they don't even know where to start from. So this should provide a piece of a working element for anybody who wants to look into it and get at least an idea of how far the debate has gone in the last 10 years and what has been done and what has not been done.
Well, and your documentaries are available to people still?
Oh, they're available. They're available on my website or on Amazon. And absolutely, I produce them and sell them directly. I don't have distributors. I don't have any of that mechanism above. So I just do it directly. And, you know, I don't sell a lot, but I sell enough to be happy with what I do and to survive. And it gives me a pleasure to be able to propagate this kind of information in this way, because filmmaking is my media and my medium. And first I was doing fiction. And then I found myself here in Hollywood saying, what the hell am I doing here? I don't understand. Here is 9/11 is going on. The whole world is changing. And here I am thinking about a love story about a guy and a girl. It doesn't work. And then I finally found a way to put my knowledge and my experience to work and do these documentaries, which I find much more interesting and useful.
Let's take some phone calls when we come back. 9/11, cancer, conspiracies. We'll take your calls next on Coast to Coast AM.